Welcome to our evening together. I understand that the past few minutes presented to some of you a wonderful opportunity to surrender to what is. Life does that, always. And if you didn't surrender to what is, you can now surrender to that. And if you're still not surrendered at this moment, if there's a little voice inside you complaining, a voice that may be familiar to you, what do you do with that? Recognize that there is a voice inside you complaining. A familiar voice. And accept that. And there may be an emotional field behind the voice. The voice may be empowered, fueled by an emotion of agitation, upset, anger. And the complaining voice in the head may be supplying new fuel to the emotion. And for many people, that's all there is. That's me, they say. That's their sense of self, their identity. And so they're trapped in a very limited self. So it's for you, the opportunity is there every moment to observe your inner state. And yes, accept your inner state. What else can you do? It is already the case. The emotion is already there. The voice is there. Complain, complain, complain. Some people, in some people, that voice is stronger than in others. But everybody has some of it. For some people, it's their entire identity. Remove the complainer and there isn't much left. Who am I? So we are here to find, to access, to realize that there is more to you than the patterns, mental, emotional, reactive patterns that perhaps for a long time have succeeded in pretending to be who you are. In other words, complete identification with those patterns. And now have a look again inside yourself. The voice may still be there, or it may have subsided, and the emotion that goes with it may still be there as an energy field inside you. Cannot be denied. What you do with it, it is as it is. This moment always is as it is. And so you surrender to the way it is. And with that comes what one could call a very different state of consciousness into this world. And this is why we are here. To access that within ourselves, to deepen it, because in many of you, that deeper state of consciousness that is not conditioned is already emerging. It is, yes, it is a transformation of consciousness. When that emerges in a human being, it is an incredible transformation of consciousness. When you're identified with the patterns, sooner or later you will encounter conflict. You will make yourself suffer, and everybody who makes themselves suffer, they make other people suffer too. And then comes violence. Physical is the last level of violence. Before it comes to physical violence, come other levels of violence, emotional, mental. The violence that you do to yourself and to others. Am I saying you shouldn't be doing it? That doesn't work. The patterns have their momentum. You cannot fight them head on. You can only transcend them by, so to speak, taking a step back and allow whatever is to be, externally or internally, with that simple act. And it is so simple, that simple act of inner alignment with now. That simple act of saying, this is what is. This is how it is. And very often, it is not the way it should be. The mind says, this shouldn't be happening. Life is very challenging. The world of form in which you move is very challenging. It never leaves you alone, one challenge after another. So one way of putting it is, we are here to find the dimension of inner peace. Not the peace that goes towards sleep, Not the peace that comes when you drift off into sleep or have had a few drinks, or the peace that comes when the doctor have given you an injection before an operation. In that case, it would be better to stay in suffering and at least be relatively conscious in conventional terms, unconscious in spiritual terms. But a peace that is highly conscious, a peace that is alert, present, aware, a peace that is inseparable from the unconditioned intelligence that dwells in you, that is far greater than even the most learned professor, far greater than anything the human mind could accumulate or know. And when you look at the world situation, you see how urgent the transformation of human consciousness has become. If we are not to be drawn into a cycle of continuing cycle of self-destruction, and so this is why we are here. A few words on how to be here this evening so that you derive the full benefit from being here. If your main interest as you sit here is on the speaker, then it won't be long before you find yourself restless and bored, if you're not restless and bored already. If your main interest or the focus of your attention is on the words that are being spoken, also for a little while that can keep you going, and then after a while the mind says, okay, what's he really saying? Is he saying anything at all? And you will soon notice that on an intellectual or conceptual level, our gathering is not very satisfying. Of course, if you wanted that, you could have gone to UCLA, where they have many satisfying lectures, intellectually satisfying. Even on an emotional level, it's not all that satisfying to be here. The kind of thing you get at with some preachers. Building up a wave of emotion. So it could appear that there isn't much happening here, not much being said. And that's because your attention is either on the speaker, maybe somebody dragged you here and said, check this guy out. And you come here and then you check this guy out and you find not much there. And you could be sitting here all this time forgetting the most important person in the room, and of course, that's yourself. So if you could be here, aware not only of your sense perceptions, visual, the words, auditory, sense perceptions. Yes, you hear the words. You see the person on a chair. But if you could also be aware of yourself as a presence, a perceiving presence. It helps to feel the aliveness in your inner energy field as you sit here. To feel somehow, to sense that every cell within your body is alive. To feel the aliveness in your hands, your legs, your entire body, to have some of your attention there. With the rest of your attention, you listen and you see. And that suddenly you might feel it feels good to be alive. And the need for stimulus, intellectual, emotional, sense perception, experiential, the need for stimulus in order to make you feel alive, then begins to disappear because you have a deep sense of aliveness already. When you are not in touch with a deep sense of aliveness, then you need a next stimulus, and nothing can keep you your sense of aliveness for very long. You need continuous food for thought, food for experiencing, food for more of this, more of that, to feel that I'm still alive. Drama, you even need drama. So as we sit here, be in touch with the inner energy field of your body. Even if you can only feel it slightly, it's fine. And even if you can only feel it in your hands, it's enough. But usually if you can feel that a certain aliveness in your hands, you can also feel it after a while in other parts of the body. So I call that the inner body, which can become an anchor for staying present in the now. The only place, the only time there ever is, here, now. So instead of running away from now or complaining about now, you move into now. You take your attention into the field of now. And then you may notice it's actually good to just be sitting there, listening. Not even needing to look forward to the next sentence. Oh. And you may notice the stream of thinking slows down. But you don't lose consciousness. You're highly alert. That is the unconditioned intelligence within you that otherwise is completely obscured by the conditioned mind, by the voice in the head and the emotions that accompany the voice in the head, that to most people is who they are. And the voice is often complains and is not happy with what is. That's a normal state. It looks to the next thing. It wants to get this out of the way. If it doesn't condemn it completely, at least it wants to be done with it. Be done with it. Where's the next thing? Come on, let's get on with it. One mind is saying. Get on with what? Well, is it possible to live in such a way that your attention, instead of being absorbed continuously by the stream of thinking, that your attention is there meeting the now, whatever form the now may take, that changes continuously. You arrive with your ticket, no chair to sit on. A little challenge. The habitual reaction, you know what that's like. Is it possible to meet that moment in a state of just attention? Here I am. We don't have any hardly enough chairs. Oh. But I have a ticket. Oh. Can you get more chairs? Yes, we are trying to find some. Okay, I'll stand here and wait. And to realize that that moment isn't really bad unless the mind judges it. You're standing somewhere instead of sitting somewhere for a few minutes. But the strange thing is, one's sense of identity, one's sense of self gets strengthened. The self that is derived, the sense of self that is derived from mind, it gets strengthened if you react and complain. Because then, whenever, this is not a personal matter, if you did it, don't feel that this is a personal shortcoming of yours. It's the human mind. That's all. Nothing personal in it whatsoever. If you make it personal, then it becomes a problem. You become a problem to yourself. And he says, "You see, I'm not spiritual yet." It's a relief to see that all those patterns are mechanical, they're not personal. They operate in every human being, unless they've already gone completely beyond it. There are more humans who are now going beyond that. So the reactivity and the complaining is used in the service of being right. If you can be right, that implies that someone, a person, or a situation, or a place, or the weather, is wrong. Whenever you mentally you complain about something, you put yourself in a position of rightness, because obviously you know better. That's why you're complaining. And I'm not talking about telling somebody to remedy something that that is not real complaining, that is passing on information. Say, please, this is not what I ordered. I ordered soup. I didn't order pudding or whatever. Or you say the soup is cold, but it should be hot. This is I ordered a hot soup. That's fine. You're giving information so that somebody can do something about it. But are you using that situation in the service of being right, which is a mechanical unconscious pattern that you can observe in yourself? Why is that happening? And why do so many people live in such a way that as they go through their day, they go from one situation like that into another, into another, into another? Because the me, the mind-made sense of self, gets stronger every time you go into reactivity and complaining. Because it is a position of imagined superiority towards that which you are complaining about. And that strengthens the fictitious me, self. You can notice that if you observe yourself. You can notice that after you've complained for a moment, you feel a little bit expanded in your sense of self. You may also notice that you feel a kind of shell around you that has hardened. And you may also notice a certain contraction in your energy field. And if you are very alert and in touch with your body, you can notice that although you seem to be enjoying yourself doing what you do, but you're not really, it's suffering, but it's not recognized as suffering. The egoic entity, the mind-made me, likes it, because it strengthens itself through that. Your body doesn't like it at all. And if you could see what it does to your body going into that state, you would be shocked. What it does to the energy flow in the body, what it does to every aspect of the functioning of the body. So the body feels injured by this, because it is, yes, it is a form of violence. The ego is like that, and it's not a personal thing at all. It is a wonderful thing to observe these patterns in yourself. There's the tendency then of the egoic entity to say, you see, you are no good. It makes a problem out of it. How do I go beyond all my patterns? Don't even try. Just be with whatever pattern arises in you at this moment. Place attention on it. Look at it. And allow it to be. The most powerful transformer is that. It transforms your consciousness. Now, this sounds as if you could do it. I'm saying this is something that you can. Can I do that? Can I allow this moment to be? Yes. If you are sitting here, You can do it. Not everybody yet can do that. There are still many in this world who are so completely identified with their mind and emotions that to say that allowing this moment to be would be meaningless. And you become very effective because an intelligence that is greater than the accumulations of the human mind suddenly emerges. And here's a situation in the field of now, and you place that attention on it that has no reaction in it, because it's you receive what is. Like this, you say, I allow this moment to be because it already is. And then there's a flow of attention. And in that attention, there's enormous intelligence. Greater than the conditioned intelligence that is the human mind. And that, if action is required, action then comes out of that intelligence that is already in you, in everyone, simply obscured by the conditioned, by the human mind, by the stream of thinking, the continuous mental noise. So in everyone, that dimension of consciousness that in the ancient teachings sometimes called enlightened is already present within you. And for so many years, spiritual seekers thought they had to achieve or attain a state of consciousness that they read about or heard about in the teachings. I need to become enlightened. I need to become free, liberated. And so what they did was the old mind patterns came in and transformed the original teaching into future, which is how the mind operates when you're totally identified with it. The next moment is always more important than this one. That's how people live. The enormous psychological need that is in everyone for the next moment, that is so normal that most people don't even notice it. Everybody lives like that. Whatever you see on TV, everybody lives. Continuous stress towards where's the next, missing the only thing there ever is, which is now. For some conceptual reality that is future, because future is no more than that, a thought in your mind. Past is the same, a thought form. Apart from a thought form, past and future have no reality whatsoever. And is that something that you need to believe, or can you verify that for yourself? I would say you can verify that for yourself, because if past and future had some reality, you would find them somewhere. Nobody has ever lived in the past. This is, we tell ourselves, yes, the ancient Greeks lived in the past, but the ancient Greeks didn't live in the past. They lived in the now, the only place where they can live. And how is it that you can even say that think that the ancient Greeks lived in the past? Because you're saying it at this moment. It comes out of the field of now, comes the thought, the ancient Greeks lived in the past. Well, they didn't. And out of it also comes the thought that you have a future. Something is going to happen to you tomorrow. But of course it can't.
and you are worried about what might happen to you tomorrow when nothing can happen to you tomorrow. Because tomorrow can only come as this moment. Why don't people realize that? And what an insane way to live, to disregard the only thing, no thing, that has any reality whatsoever, which is now. Your life, the one thing that never left you, is now. Cannot leave you. It's always. Life and now are inseparable. The essence of who you are, because you are life, you are both a form of life, a temporary expression, but you are also, on a deeper level, you are life, taking on a temporary form. We could also say, you are the one life, the one consciousness that takes on form as a thought, as an emotion, as the entire universe. But the essence of who you are is life, unmanifested in your essence, timeless. And life and now are one, which means maybe I should have kept this for the end of our talk, otherwise you'll go home. Which means you and now are one, because life and now are inseparable. Now the mind says, does that actually mean anything? But when I say you are the now, if you try to think about that, you won't get very far. But if you allow that statement to be there as, one could say, a pointer, a signpost, something that points beyond itself, that is not a statement that is supposed to explain something, but to take you to a realization. So if you then say, I am the now, you can't think about that, but you can sense something there. The now, that no matter what happens, never leaves me, that is one with who I am. And now he come to a strange thing. I said, I am. Those are very mysterious words. I am. The most misused word in the language, and the most used word in the language, I. But usually, when people say I, they refer to me and my story. They refer to their fears, their ambitions, their desires, their memories, their reactive patterns. Me. I. But there is a deeper sense to I that has nothing to do with your story or your reactive patterns or your memories, your stream of thinking. A deeper sense of beingness, presence, I am-ness that always is, was, will be the essence of your feeling of who you are. And because this is a very strange thing, when you look inside yourself, what is it that makes up your sense of who you are? That is the one thing that people think is, feel is so precious. There is something in me that the me, I don't want to lose that. It's what there's such fear of death, because I don't, they feel like they can't imagine the world without me. A world without me? Is that possible? So what is the, now when, to most people, me is their story. So when you meet somebody, when they talk about themselves, they say, I. What do you do? What do you, I am this, I am that. But where, when you, and they believe that their identity lies in their story, their history, their story, their reactive patterns. And that identity is, feels incomplete to almost everybody. Everybody, in fact. An identity derived from a story feels incomplete, so you need the future to complete me and my story. That's how people live. That's a desperate need for future, and the future never completes your story. No matter what you add to the story of me to make yourself finally have arrived, your whole life is made, suddenly it all makes sense, and there are always loose ends, even when you finally make it. Everything is there, and then sooner or later another form crumbles close to you. Because forms do that. No form is very stable in this universe. So you arrange your life circumstances, try to get it all into place, career working beautifully, relationships working beautifully. This is the story of I. Careers, relationships, money, health, body, healthy, strong, everything, beautiful place to live, to car, intelligent, learning things, knowledgeable, experience all kinds of things, and all great, it's all arranged, all the building blocks of my life are now in place. And if, as long as nothing moves, that means I finally made it. Everything is arranged. And in some films that you see, that illusion is perpetuated, that it can all come, that the story of your life can come to a happy conclusion. And you can see that when you read a work of fiction, you get the so-called happy ending. When you read a work of literature which has a certain depth, then you're never quite sure when you reach the end. It won't be a, this is it. This leaves an openness. And so in reality, as long as your sense of I is derived from the circumstances of your life, the story of me, it is never satisfying for very long. And that's an amazing realization. And it's continuously things go wrong in it, which isn't wrong at all, but they seem to go wrong. Things suddenly leave you, or things come in that don't fit into the story of me, that shouldn't be there at all. And there are many people who feel that their entire story has gone completely wrong. They are working where they shouldn't be working. They're in a relationship they shouldn't be in. Their financial situation isn't what it should be. Their car isn't what it should be. They don't feel they know enough or are enough. Or in other words, it just hasn't worked out at all. And the feeling that they have is, I'm not yet myself. I'm not yet me yet fully. I have some idea that of what I could be, but it's an idea in the head. And you might live with the delusion that, as I had for many years, that one day the world is going to recognize you. And you finally get the recognition that you deserve. Throughout my 20s, I lived in that delusion. Is somebody going to finally recognize me? And of course, I was continuously unhappy and unrecognized. And then a strange thing happened. I recognized myself. And then the need to be recognized by the world disappeared. And after many years of being nobody in the eyes of the world, suddenly the world thinks I'm great. Finally, they recognize me. But unfortunately, there's no real satisfaction in that anymore. Because I know that they don't recognize me at all, they recognize themselves. And that's so much better. Oh. They don't come to see me. What for? It would be absurd. But when they come, something that is there points to their innermost reality beyond story. That's why there is that, wow, that this self-recognition, self-realization. Oh. Who you are beyond the story. Who you are beyond the circumstances of your life, which perhaps until this point provided you with your sense of self. So people confuse what I sometimes call their life situation with their life. And all their attention is absorbed completely by their life situation, by the things of this world. And this is when you look around you, as you go through your daily life, this is how most people live, with their attention entirely absorbed by things. In a wider sense, in a narrow sense, and in a wider sense. Their attention, their consciousness absorbed by things in a narrow sense, the conventional sense of the word, people's constant preoccupation with objects, possessions, this and that, identification with it, compare myself to others who have more or less than me, unconscious processes. And then, but in a wider sense, things are anything that has form. Thoughts are things. They are not things, not physical things, but they are a form that consciousness temporarily takes, a thought form. Thought comes. Thoughts are very much like clouds. A thought comes, then it goes. And then another thought comes, or streams of thoughts usually. The only difference between thoughts and clouds is that clouds are never the same. And thoughts, 95-98% of it, are very repetitive. And so the sky would look very boring if it were like, it's the same clouds again. It's the same clouds as yesterday. And the next day again. I'm stuck in Groundhog Day. And this is how life is for most people, because they are stuck with their conditioned thought processes. Been there for years. Same. And thought processes, which incorporating part of that is reactions, reactivity. So you're stuck with that. And so you, no matter what situation you go into, you meet the situation with the conditioned processes of your mind. You judge it, you interpret it, you react to it out of the conditioning, which is the me, the I, the story me. And so you repeat the same things again and again. Even if you go into a new relationship, many of you have experienced going through the same pattern in the relationship, same pattern in whatever. You could go to another planet with the conditioning of your mind and recreate the same situation living amongst aliens on another planet. Nothing would change if that remains in place, if identification with the conditioning, which is the stream of thinking, the emotions that go with it, the reactive patterns, the judgment patterns, the ways you interpret things, you immediately think, this is how it is, and commenting on whatever happens out of the old conditioning, every event, every person you meet, immediately is judged, commented, put a few mental labels on. Now I know who he is, because you've called him something. You've called him this, this, and this, and this. That's who he is. Next time you meet that person, you don't meet that person at all. You're meeting the screen of mind, that the labels that you've put on that person. You say, hello. You're not meeting a human being. You're meeting your own mental labels. And then you react with, you interact with that human being through the interpretations of your mind already. And so you recreate same experiences. And that's me. That's me and my story. And so you can add more of the same kind of, then whatever fits into your story, you will then add to the story. You won't add something that doesn't fit into your story. So many people have a story of, oh, poor me. That's a story that has a strong aspect of poor me to it, unfairly treated by life. So if this is only one possible, stories of different kinds of stories, but basically they're all stories. If it's poor me and unfairly treated by life, you will select those things that conform to your story already, things in your experience. You will almost recreate that. And so, yes, and you will interpret things that are maybe totally neutral as having been unfairly treated. You go to a restaurant, the waiter ignores you completely, it's happening again. Because your mother ignored you the first 10 years of your life, and then you have a very strong reaction, and then you can tell a story about it. I went to that restaurant, and he looked, I could see him looking at me, but he didn't come over. He wanted to, it's so, you've added more, a little, and the story grows. And what's the actual, in most cases, this, the situation is quite neutral. What you add to it out of your story gives it fuel, karmic fuel. So as an innocent thing of somebody not acknowledging you to some people who have a different story where that is not an important ingredient is meaningless. To somebody else, not somebody doesn't return your call. To someone who has a story that has other issues but not acknowledgement issues, it's fine, he didn't call me, okay. But to someone else who has a story that's associated with not being given acknowledgement, attention, out of the past conditioning, there will be an enormous reaction. How dare he? Who does he think he is? He let me down again. Everybody, all women let me down. All men let me down, whatever. We know this. The ways in which you interpret reality is through the conditioned story of me. It's a heavy way to live. And then you don't see that the innocence that is actually in situations when you do not impose an interpretation on it, when you do not attempt to incorporate a situation or a person or an event into the story of me, or do not attempt to push it away because you can't fit it into the story. This shouldn't be in my life. Why am I in this office? This shouldn't be happening. So you try to push. See how automatic the process of labeling, interpreting is, and see how simple life can be if you can allow this moment to be as it is without imposing the heaviness of a story on it, to try to fit it in or reject it, because either it will enhance your story or it will make your story somehow doesn't fit in at all. It shouldn't be happening. It's one of the two. So, and so there's the conditioning that people live with a whole lifetime. A whole lifetime. Never being able to go beyond a limited sense of I. Is that who you are, the circumstances of your life that are not complete yet, never will be? The story that you tell yourself or others, a few reactive patterns. Living your whole life trapped in that tiny little shell. And even if for a while the story seems to improve greatly, it's never satisfying for that long, and things then tend to go wrong again. It might suddenly improve financially, and then relationships collapse. Or you have great marriage, but you're poor. Career taking off, and you lose privacy. You lose personal relationships. The world of form is always limited. One way or another, you encounter limitations. Whatever, you cannot arrange forms around you that are all perfect. And so when you see that, it's quite a relief to see that the feeling that you are not complete yet, the feeling is not a personal matter at all. Everybody has it. Don't believe the magazines when they tell you with glossy photos that these are the people who made it. Their stories are complete. They're not. They are just as unhappy as everybody else. And ultimately, it doesn't matter whether you're unhappy in a mansion or unhappy in a little room. It's the same inner state. Unhappiness is ultimately inseparable from deriving your sense of self from that limited story of me. Unhappiness is even a necessary ingredient for that sense of identity. That sense of me needs its unhappiness and its conflict and its problems, because it's through that that it can define its boundary, me and my problems, that which impinges upon me, me and my enemies. It loves its enemies, the me. It needs its enemies. Enemies can be people or situations. And usually the enemy is the present moment. And there's the continuous state of contraction, of reactivity. So this is how people live. They make the present moment into their enemy. The only place where life is, the only place where all there ever is, this. They are against it. Not aligned with it internally, out of alignment, a strange way to live. Suffering, great deal of suffering arises. And so this, the mind-made me is a suffering entity, ultimately. Occasionally it gets a few pleasures, but they never last that long. Occasionally it gets a high. You add a thought form to me. Just bought a BMW. Ah. The car is not important, of course. The thought form that is imbued with self is important. My car as a thought form is what makes that car so important. It's not the car at all. It's the fact that the thought of my car, that thought has self in it. So you have, and then you cling to that, you add that thought form to the collection of thought forms that make up who you think you are. And for a while it's satisfying. I have expanded because I have added this big thought form. There's self in the thought, me. And if you can add a big house or mansion in Beverly Hills, oh, mine. And then you look at it and say, you feel, yes, you have grown. And then after a little while, the thought form doesn't quite fulfill its function anymore. It wears out. And it's just a car. And then you just sit there and you realize you cannot sit in more than one room at a time. So you have 25 rooms there, but you can't be in all of them at once. And you can only sit in one chair at a time. And then the thought form of mansion isn't all that satisfying anymore. And if you have made it in the eyes of the world, you've reached a dangerous point now, because you can't think of anything else to add to me. You have it all. There may be a few people here who have reached that point and have also seen the unsatisfactoriness that is even there. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here. You would be enjoying that. And it is not to say that you cannot enjoy the world of form. It is beautiful. It is to be enjoyed. So many beautiful forms around you. Forms become heavy when there is a self in them, a sense of me, self. Then they become problematic, and then you begin to suffer and be unhappy. So why not have a mansion? Am I saying renounce all your mansions, move out of Beverly Hills? No. It doesn't really matter. You can enjoy that. Why not? Beautiful forms around you. And if the mansion should collapse and leave you, you may suddenly find yourself sitting in a cabin somewhere else, still feeling the aliveness within you and the fullness of this moment. The incredible fullness that is concealed underneath the appearance that this moment takes. But you cannot get beyond the form that this moment takes as long as you are fighting internally with the form that this moment takes, which is a normal way to live. That keeps you trapped in form, your own form identity, fighting some form around you. But if you can allow whatever form this moment takes to be, because you have seen the insanity of living in any different way, and also because you have seen, and this is maybe a little shocking at first, when you see that since everything in this universe, as Buddhists know, as physicists know, everything in this universe is totally interconnected. What we perceive as separate things, bodies, events, situations are not ultimately separate. There is a web. The entire cosmos is one web of interconnectedness. There are ultimately no separate events or separate things. Every little thing is connected with the totality in ways that we could not possibly understand. Even Einstein could understand even 1% of how everything, but he had great insight. Nobody can intellectually understand how, in what way, an event is connected to the totality, but we can see that it is connected to the totality. And that means whatever is has come about by the totality. Whatever is cannot be otherwise. It doesn't mean that nothing is ever going to change, no, but the isness of this moment, the form that this moment takes is as it is, because the totality with which it is connected has brought it about. So if you judge it and react it, you separate something out of the oneness and say this is a separate event and this should not be. So when you see the inevitability of the form that this moment takes, Wow. Even arriving here, just to take a relatively insignificant example, arriving here and finding not enough chairs. Why should that be happening to me? I got my ticket. Well, the entire universe has brought this about. Of course it has. Whatever form this moment takes, we cannot know how it is connected. It's only occasionally that in retrospect something happens to you that the mind says, this is a dreadful thing, it is a senseless thing that happened to me. The universe seems to be a place of complete, where random things happen, doesn't complete absurdity, like a theater of the absurd to some people. And only years later do you realize, if that thing that I called dreadful at the time had not happened to me, all this would not have happened. I would not have changed. I would not have realized this. I would not have gone beyond this limited sense of me that I was. Oh, and so occasionally you can get a glimpse of how a seemingly meaningless event does make sense within the totality, within the whole. But in most cases, you cannot know through the intellect how this event is connected to the totality. All you can know is that it is connected to the totality. And so, if you then allow it to be because you've seen the futility of internally resisting the totality, then you become part, you were already, but you somehow had removed yourself in an illusory way from the totality. You become part again of that, and an enormous energy and intelligence can express itself through you when you drop the resistance to what is. The intelligence of the totality, of the union, of the cosmos, the one intelligence, can express itself through you then. And that is why all creative humans, no matter what their field of creativity is, in their field of creativity, they have the ability to step aside as the me and be in the state of surrendered, aware presence, the state of attention, the state of looking at a canvas, looking at a piece of paper, looking at whatever you may, even the scientists, using thought for a while and then arriving at an insoluble problem, and then looking. Thinking comes to an end for a moment and is replaced by what we could call pure attention or pure awareness. And in that moment, an intelligence that is greater than the accumulated intelligence of the mind operates. And in that moment, the creative impulse comes, and the creative impulse always comes from somewhere beyond the little person, the little me. And the little person subsides when you allow this moment to be completely and give it your full attention. The two go together. You allow what is to be, and you give what is your attention. That is the awakening of unconditioned intelligence in you. And that is when your life suddenly shows enormous capacity for transformation and renewal. that goes far beyond what anybody could have predicted when they looked at the conditioning of your mind, far beyond what any psychoanalyst